Hello, my name is William Cueto, and welcome to Builders of Hope, a show about young Catholic professionals who are living out their faith in all aspects of their lives, their family lives, their social lives, and their careers. Growing in the spiritual life is not just for priests and nuns. It's for all of us, as you will see through the lives of our guests who are striving to live out their faith and build a better world. Dr. Carlos Moas is a respiratory doctor at Mercy Hospital in Miami, Florida. He will speak to us about his career and how he integrates his faith with his professional life. Later in the show, his wife Lucy will join us, and they will both speak to us about how they prioritize and balance work, their family of five children, their social lives, and their spiritual lives. They will also speak to us about marriage and the church's teaching on artificial birth control, and much more.
I'm a pulmonary specialist, which means that I deal with diseases of the lungs, and in my field of medicine, a lot of what I do is hospital-based medicine, a lot of intensive care unit medicine, and a lot of dealing with the elderly and people who are near the end of their lives. And I've seen over the years that, yes, this is where God wants me to be, and I see it especially in my dealings with terminally ill patients. And I think that people who are terminally ill, families that deal, that have relatives in that situation, are especially vulnerable at that period of time. And that's where I think, as a physician and as a Catholic physician, I've been given this, you know, marvelous opportunity to, comfort them always, you know, be a support for those patients and for those families, even very often when there's not much to be done from a medical point of view. I don't think that my profession ends when the situation's hopeless. I really see that it's beginning, especially when those situations are hopeless, where I can hopefully bring some of that consolation, you know, that God asks us to. There's a thought that comes to my mind a lot, especially, you know, when I'm tired, and often dealing with patients that are sick, it does get to be depressing, and it wears on you, as you can imagine.
I could imagine, yeah.
But I have a thought that comes from the gospel, and where Jesus says, "I was sick, and you visited me." And I think to myself, well, as a physician, I get that chance, you know, every day to visit people, to visit sick people. And even if there's not much to be done for them from a medical point of view, I feel that, you know, part of my profession is to visit them, and you always bring them that hope, you know, that consolation. If they're people of faith, it definitely makes a big difference in how they're approaching death. It's an excellent opportunity.
Great. There's something I wanted to read, and this has actually a very good time to bring it out. And this comes from the Pope's address this year, in the Jubilee year, to physicians. And this is what he communicates. "You have firsthand experience that in your profession, medical care and technical services are not enough, even if provided with exemplary professionalism. You must be able to offer the sick the special spiritual medicine, which is the warmth of genuine human contact, inspiring them to struggle for it with an inner determination that is sometimes decisive for their recovery." So what he's saying is that doctors not only have a call to perform at their best ethically and technologically in their professions, in their technical area, but also to help people in addition to the physical, spiritually. And there's a connection there that I understand, and he's speaking about that when they do have this spiritual part, that it even helps in their recovery.
Yeah, definitely. It does. And being able to bring bring that hope of Christ to the ill, I think is key to what you were saying before, that our faith is not something that we box in a box on Sunday and store it away the rest of the week. It's something that we live out. And just in particular in my field of medicine, I think I have an opportunity to share that faith with the patients, just in the way I deal with them.
And what do you see today in practice? What's the more prevalent approach to how they view the profession and medicine in general?
I would say, William, unfortunately, the rule is that too many physicians view medicine as a business. Mm-hmm. and don't get me wrong, there is definitely a business aspect, because we all have to live, we all have to, you know, pay the mortgage, and we have to send our children to school. But medicine in particular goes above and beyond that. It really is, I think, a very special calling. And obviously not everybody's called to it, but those who are, I think that they need to be, to see their profession as an extension of their faith. It's not just a business.
Yeah, so although there are a lot of good doctors out there, the prevailing view of how they treat the profession is more so of a business.
I would say it is, and you know, that's the way our society is geared. This is a very materialistic society, and everything's sort of been turned into an industry. Our sports are an industry, healthcare has become an industry, and unless we're rooted in the faith, we can be swept away by that tide that tells you, you know, this patient is just an insurance policy, and he is worth so much money, and he is worth so much time, and he's worth so much effort.
And that's exactly what the Pope was speaking to. Now, if you did not have God in your life, and he was not the driving force, your faith that was guiding you, forming you, your conscience, and how to use your profession, and you allowed society and the culture that we exist in today to be your conscience and form you, how do you think you'd view your profession?
Pretty much the way the average physician would. It's a business.
So that's an example of where bringing God into your profession and your life, you know, has an effect on how you treat it, how you view it, how you treat your patients, everything.
It makes all the difference in the world. I belong to a Marian congregation. It's a men's organization. And part of the opportunity that I get there is to help in the formation of, you know, other young professionals. They may not be physicians, but we will have, you know, weekly, we'll go to weekly mass, and then we'll have weekly meetings where we discuss issues. We'll discuss an encyclical. We'll discuss a teaching of the church on a social issue. We'll discuss, you know, end-of-life issues, all sorts of issues. And I think that my role there is really twofold. It's teaching by word and by didactic teaching, but maybe a larger part of it is teaching by example.
Right.
And the example being that I have a profession, I'm busy in my profession, you know, I have a family, they definitely keeps me busy, but there is something that unifies, you know, that profession, that family, and that makes them more meaningful,
sure,
more fulfilling, which is my faith.
Sure.
And
we need
transmitting
more,
that.
Yeah, and we need more groups like that,
right,
you know, that they're there to continue to form you throughout your lives in all aspects. In addition to this group, what else has been part of your formation that you attribute to, you know, how you've come to be today?
Well, part of it, a large part of my formation, apart from the Marian group, is belonging to basically a married reflection group,
mm-hmm,
that Lucy and I belong to, where a group of, let's say, five married couples will meet on a monthly basis. And, you know, we all arrange for babysitting, we all leave everything apart, we meet on a Friday night, and each couple has an assigned topic. Then the topic is a 45-minute topic, and then there's time for social hour, mm-hmm, afterwards, but that 45-minute topic is also some exploring of the faith, and in that way too, the spiritual growth, the growth in the spiritual life, is not something that's just done by the man or just done by the woman, but as a couple we come together and we explore, you know, faith issues with other couples.
That's excellent, and that's a way to build social friendships and to help form each other, and you have a community,
which
is always important.
Which is very important, especially in the time that we live now, where that community may not be your neighbor, it may not be your children's classmates, but you have a community, and you know that your children are safe, sharing time, mm-hmm, with other people, and seeing good examples.
We'd like to welcome Lucy Mois with us now. So we have Carlos and Lucy Mois together. Welcome, Lucy.
Hey, Willie, how are you?
Good, thank you. It's good to have you.
Good to see you.
One thing I wanted to ask both of you, it's really important for a lot of young Catholic professionals that are still single, is the big decision of finding a spouse, finding a partner. And that's one of the most important decisions in life. And not always the easiest one, especially in today's culture. can you give a little bit of perspective on what you've looked for in a spouse? You know, what's important in a spouse?
I'll let you. I've been talking all this time for you, sir.
I mean, I have to say that, first of all, I was terrified of marriage. I don't know if Carlos, you probably weren't terrified, but I was terrified. And the reason why is I saw all these couples around me, they were in bad marriages. I mean, there weren't many couples that I saw. There were people very happily married. There were a lot of divorces. We got married when I was 29. Carlos was 32. So by that time, a lot of my high school friends were already getting divorced. So I was absolutely terrified. I knew that if I got married, it would be for life. So how am I going to find this person that I would commit myself to? And of course, when I found Carlos, I knew he was the one. We had very good advice from very wise people, and a priest had told me once, and my brother, who was also single, he says, you know, shoot high, be ambitious in the marriage spouse that you want. There are two decisions in life that are really going to affect you for the rest of your life. One is your choice of your career, and secondly, your marriage partner. So choose well. And go for the best, you know, go for the one who's the most spiritual, for the one who's the most handsome, for the one who's the most fun. Whatever it is that you're looking for, you know, be very ambitious in that. And so I always listened to that. And I had another friend that I taught with who always said, Lucy, don't settle for less. You know, you can have it all if you want to. And I think in Carlos, I found that all that I was looking for.
But there's, one of the things you were mentioning earlier, that for some people, they don't even know where to look. In other words, they've placed themselves in the wrong atmosphere or setting, and you know, the people that they're meeting in general, even friends, you know, are not of the caliber that they're looking for. You mentioned something like that earlier.
Right. About the fish in the pond. Where you're fishing, or yes, I think it'd be a lot of people that would be sort of acceptable, in a married life. I know I dated other people, and there were. Fine, they were professionals, they were Catholic, they went to church every Sunday, but it still wasn't the kind of person that I could spend the rest of my life with. I remember one person in particular told me once, well, I'm going to be an absent father. Big warning sign. How can you go into a marriage saying, I'm going to be an absent father? Well, I don't want an absent father for my children. You know, I want someone who's going to be there for my children, someone who is going to be the spiritual head of the family. I remember my sister-in-law told me the man has to be the spiritual head of the family, not the woman, which is often the case. You know, I know we have good friends who always say that he's a friend of Carlos. Says, I married my wife because I knew she'd help me get to heaven. You know, yeah. So you're trying to find the person that's going to help you get to heaven, not the one who's going to take you somewhere else.
And then so together, you know, both of your lives. You know, came together, and you were doing different apostolic works, and you were doing different things. And together, you do a lot. Together, you had to let go of some things that you each did, and now you do things together.
Right. Carlos had a medical mission to the Dominican Republic when we were dating and when we first got married, and I was in the Legion of Mary, and I would do door-to-door visitation, evangelization, and also the soup kitchen. And so when we first got married, he would continue his medical mission, and you know, he would leave on a trip, and I was there with the baby. Yeah. Bye, when your mission is here with me, where are you going?
The mission here.
I was very lonely when he would go on the medical mission, sure. And I was also doing door-to-door by myself or with somebody else in the Legion, so we just decided we need to do something together as a couple. You know, it's important to do an apostolate, but not separately.
And what is it that you do together?
Well, now we teach at our parish here, we teach natural family planning to engaged couples, to married couples, and we have a busy class schedule every month.
And that brings up a very hot issue, you know, in the church and outside of the church. You know, natural family planning is highly criticized and questioned, you know, by society in general. Artificial birth control is a way of life, you know, for many people, and it's very prevalent in society. There's something that I have that I was looking at earlier, and it's very interesting. The lead title says, contraception leads to marriage breakdown. Now, if you could explain a little bit of that and a little bit about the natural family planning, it'd be really nice to hear.
We teach through an organization called the Couple to Couple League, and we're volunteer teachers. And the motto of the Couple to Couple League is building better marriages through natural family planning. So the idea is not that natural family planning is an end in and of itself. It's not birth control for Catholics. It is just the natural consequence of an understanding of our own humanity and our own sexuality. And what we try to convey to the couples that we teach is that if they would just put themselves in God's hands, you know, do what God asked us to do as a married couple and, you know, obey His laws, the fruits are enormous. And what we've seen
particularly when we teach couples that have been married for, let's say, 5, 8, 10 years, and we get a few of them that come and they take the class because they realize there's something missing from their marriage. So they take our class and they say, we're going to make the commitment, we're going to stop using contraceptives, we're going to do natural family planning. They come back, really, and they tell us, why didn't anybody ever tell us about this? This is incredible. The romance is back in our marriage.
It makes a difference. I mean, they claim that they notice a difference in their marriages.
Right. The communication's back in their marriage. The excitement is back. And it's all because they brought God back in their marriage.
Right.
Unconsciously, they were shutting a door to God. And most people, I think, do it unconsciously because they never heard any better. They were never taught any better.
And so you've seen a lot of fruits come from the natural family planning process. And what is it about artificial birth control that is a problem? What is the church's main view on that, and why is it against it?
I'll take it. The understanding, to understand the church's point of view, you really have to understand who we are as persons. And as persons, you know, we have a free will. And as also in a marriage is different in the sense that marriage is a mirror image of the love that God has for His church. And in that marriage act, that couple is bringing together two aspects, if you will, the two sides of a coin. That marriage act has a unitive aspect and a procreative aspect. As Dr. Janet Smith says, love making is for bonding and it's for babies. So those two aspects are not something that we invented or that we can alter. It is in the nature of things. It's just like plants need sunlight to grow. Well, a couple, if it is to be happy, truly happy, and to truly, you know, grow as God wants it to grow in love, has to leave that love making open to the possibility of procreation.
And contraceptive doesn't do that. It cuts God
out. It's saying, God, thank you so much for the gift of lovemaking, and we will control the fertility as we see fit.
And in natural family planning, someone might say, well, you're controlling there as well. You know, you're controlling when the baby is going to come or not. But the difference there is what? Why is that not
sacrifice.
The same?
the difference there is that in natural family planning, we are using our free will to decide either to abstain from sexual relations or to engage in them. You know, based on knowledge that God has given us. We've done nothing to block God.
It's always open to God.
It's always open to God. And your mindset changes. You begin to see, when you're in the contraceptive mindset, you begin to see children as a failure of contraception. It's a mistake that happened. If you use natural family planning and, you know, God chooses to bless you with a child, it is a blessing from God. It's not a failure.
And people still laugh it off. I remember when I had 2 children or 3 children, I was in a little mommy and me class, and this woman said, are you going to have any more? And I said, yeah. She said, oh, that's right. You're one of the people who sees children as a blessing. And I was like, yes, I do, you know. So, and then children are a blessing. And that was another thing. When we were getting married, everybody told us, don't have children right away. You know, whatever you do not have children right away, because it's the end of your marriage. You know, you're always going to have this, you know, little child around the house. You're not going to sleep. You're going to be crying. I mean, it was just a gloom and doom. And of course, we were not going to wait around to have children. Regardless, was 32, I was 29, so we decided we would. I didn't even tell the people that I worked for that I was pregnant, because this went so against, you know, everything that anybody had told me in our society about having kids right away. I just said, no one is going to mention it.
You were working
to anybody. I was working at the time, and we had our first child. It was wonderful, and it wasn't this horrible thing that everybody had warned us about. So about 4 or 5 months after we had the first child, we said, well, you know, we can do this again. So I got pregnant again. And then people told us, oh, well, the first one's not that bad. It's really the second one that's horrible. Just wait till the second. So, of course, I was scared. Carlos, you know, what am I going to do when the second one comes around? And he would tell me, it's going to be as bad as the first one. Which it wasn't going to be that bad. And, of course, here we are 5 kids later.
Yeah.
And, of course, there are sacrifices. There are 4 children to go over homework work, there are 4 children to be bathed and dressed and everything else, but there are also 4 children to have a wonderful time with. you know, to go boating with, to have laughs with, to have pillow fights with. But, you know, and that's another thing too, right? It's not like Carlos always tells us, it's not a numbers game. You know, let's take it one at a time. You know, we just had this one, let's see how it goes, and we can decide if it's right for us to have another one or not, take into account all the things in our lives.
And we try to convey that to the couples that we teach. It's, you know, if your finances and your emotional state and your health, you know, permit you to have one child, you know, well, God will bless you and your one child. If you can have more, you really shouldn't deprive yourself or your children of the blessings of brothers and sisters. And the Pope mentioned that in one of his writings. He says, perhaps the best gift you can give your children is not so much a material gift, but the gift of a brother or a sister.
So what's your recipe for marriage and for raising your family, if you can give a few elements of that recipe?
For raising a family, I would say, especially for raising children, I'd say lots of love, and at the same time, lots of discipline, in the best sense of the word. Because the sense of discipline is that you want somebody to be your disciple. Hopefully, in the same way that you're a disciple of the Lord, your children will be a disciple of you and your spouse. And that's something that I can say happily that, you know, we've seen the fruits of so far. You know, we're very happy with our children whenever they go away with my in-laws, or they go away with a friend and they come back and they say, your children were so well behaved, we could take them anywhere in the world and they would be good. They're so polite, so respectful. And that's a battle that you win at home, you know, by spending time with them, and not just by example, but also by correction. I think that's something that parents need to do more of, is, you know, instruct their children that this is the way that's acceptable to behave and to answer people.
And playing with them. You play a lot with them.
I play a lot with them.
Right. Yeah. I mean, Carlos comes home, right, they run to the door, he gets on all fours, and they ride him like a horse, they go around the house. Right. You know, so he listens to them, he plays with them. You know, they want a parent who can play with them. And I think as a couple, it's very important that a couple plays also. Mm-hmm. You know, there's time for kids, and there's time for work, and then there's time that we need to be together alone as well. Right. And you fall in love all over again.
Right. Yeah. That's very important in a marriage, to take that time away from the work, from sometimes from social commitments. You know, they're all good things, but out of those good things, there's a set of priority and say, well, the first thing is my spouse. Because really, you know, between Lucy and I, there's a bond, which is a sacramental bond, okay? There's a bond between ourselves and our children, but that's not a sacramental bond. So even in the order of things that God has put in our life, the sacrament between husband and wife is so powerful that, you know, you really need to protect it and cultivate it.
And it flows from that.
And then it flows, right. And so the best thing you can do for your children is to love your spouse.
If either one of you or the both of you can just leave our audience with one message as far as, you know, how to use their lives, you know, for those that are not called to the priesthood or the religious life, those special vocations that are called to be married in that vocation, how to use their lives. You can speak to that for a moment.
You know, I think God takes you where you need to be if you listen to Him. You know, when I was 18, I went on a retreat and the priest said, every decision that you make in your life, ask yourself, does this bring me to closer to God? Or does it take me away from God? You know, and it's very powerful. And even little decisions, you know, and they're major decisions. You know, but does this take us to God, or is it taking me away from that? And I know a year ago I was involved in so many things at school. We were matrimonial planning. We were giving talks to youth groups on chastity. We were giving talks at Engaged Encounters. I had a spiritual formation group for young women. Plus, I had my five children, and I was really not being a very good mother. You know, I was just not. My patience was wearing thin with the children. And I spoke with, you know, a priest, a good friend of ours, and he said, you know what, you need to leave aside some of these things. I need to focus on your children. You know, again, is that what's going to lead me closer to God? Giving all these wonderful talks on God and the faith and coming home and not being kind to my children? No, you know, you need to let go of all that stuff. That's one of the reasons why I stopped working. You know, well, you know, I was at the time, you know, working on my master's, doing volunteer work, teaching. Well, I left that, and now I have to focus on these little children, because that now is the most important. This is the work of my life. My life's work is this. And if I fail at this,
sure,
then what was the point?
We'd like to thank you for joining us on Builders of Hope. If you'd like to contact today's guest or myself, email us at our website at buildersofhope.com. We invite you to join us next week when our guest will be Carlos Brito. Carlos will share with us the importance that spiritual retreats play in his life. In today's culture, we are seeing biomedical stem cell research being done on aborted babies in order for handicapped persons to walk again. Carlos will speak to us about his view on the subject. Thank you.